The very difficult thing about questions of space and place and racial harassment is trying to understand how it emerges, you know, what sort of history ought it to be located in. And my research has suggested to me that the history we ought to locate that type of phenomenon in is the history of the decline of the imperial position of Britain. To put this another way, it's the history of the decline of the greatness of British identity as an imperial identity. Now, one of the things that we try to, at least I'm trying to argue now, is that particular crisis of identity is beginning to be resolved through systematic acts of racial violence, which try to define Britishness in terms of a territorial right to occupy a certain space, and define it as a place that can have no other identity but a white identity. It's in that sense we can understand things like go back to your own country, or this is a white estate, or the country is rather frightened of other cultures swamping us.
But what implications do such ideas have for politicians and policymakers?
It's very important for politicians and policymakers to be clear about how to place racial harassment. Is racial harassment simply something which you can understand in terms of the discourse of crime and criminology, which is to say it's about individual infractions of the criminal law? Or does it have a wider resonance which takes us into the deep-rooted concerns of politics and culture, the deep-rooted concerns about the future of the nation? Now, if it has something to do with the future of the nation around questions of politics and culture, that really does mean talking about what sort of neighbourhoods and what sort of environments and what sort of cities we envisage for the future. Do we envisage a multicultural city in which the spaces of the city are democratically, if you like, available to the populace, irrespective of the places that they come from generationally? And at the same time, are we developing a sense of British identity, which defines identity in terms of citizenship and rights which go with participation in society, rather than some kind of ancestral connection with society, which ultimately can only be defined in terms of whiteness?
Some people might say that it's all very well for academics to construct theories about the problems of racial violence, but how does this help people dealing with the problems on the ground?
The clear implication, it seems to me, must be to get beyond the idea that we can simply talk about racism in terms of individual experiences, and that we are talking about the interaction of communities. Therefore, it means that the law has to recognize the different status, if you like, the different threatened status, which is what a criminal law should do, of different communities. Just in the same way as we have to recognize the differential in terms of threats to men and to women. Now, once we can become involved in that sort of recognition, it means that we can give priority to enacting policies and laws which take racism seriously and attempt to strengthen the environment in terms of community safety for particular communities. That would mean making sure that clear publicity is made available when particular communities have been violated and those responsible have been arrested. And it also would mean trying to develop the sorts of education which enable us to recognize a wider range of crimes which have deeper cultural roots.
Barna Hess's research has also focused on two under-examined issues. First, it looks at how men and women experience racial violence differently, the gender aspects. Second, it looks at the meaning or meanings of attacks which are nearly always directed at the physical body of the victim.
The most fascinating thing about racial harassment is that the target is the body. Now, in the history of racism, the body is never missed as a target. The manipulation of the body, its mutilation, its representation, the way it engages racist fantasies, all of these things involve marking the body at some point. Now, what I find interesting, insofar as the literature on racial harassment is concerned, is how we tend not to recognize how the local vicinity is a vicinity which is constructed in terms of what one might call the ethnoscape, which is the landscape of the populations that make up the city. People have an investment in the sorts of bodies they like to see or not see in their local environment. And in many respects, what racial harassment is a politics of trying to redesign the local environment in terms of its visibility of actual bodies. That's why the body is never missed. It's the first target to be violated. Now, in that particular context, we can see how it links up with questions of spatiality, where you can legitimately be placed, where you can illegitimately be excluded. They become contested points. Questions of gender seem to be inscribed in questions of space. It's quite clear that if you look during the course of a day, the likelihood of particular genders occupying particular spaces becomes evident. Women might find themselves being occupied, if they're not working, at home with children. The home as a space, apparent place of safety, becomes a very vulnerable place to be. When I mentioned the firebomb attack on Mrs. Khan and her children, she was at home with the children and they perished. You also find that in terms of interactions with children, going to school or going to the park, they too become places where women can be abused, and abused in ways which take sexualized forms. Men find themselves abused in ways which take highly masculinized forms. That's when the gangs would be part and parcel of the struggle which is going on over territory. It's a very difficult process, always trying to relate race and gender. But in terms of racial harassment, it seems that the distinction is quite clear in terms of the spatiality of the experience, where it's likely you will find particular genders coming into contact with an experience of racial harassment.
Barnard Hess has some new and interesting ways of conceptualizing the problems of racial violence and harassment, and you can follow these up through the references in the notes. It's important to think about the usefulness of such thinking and how it can contribute to solving a very practical problem. It's useful too to think about how the three perspectives offered in these interviews, those of the researcher, the activist and the theorist, relate to each other, if at all.
This is the end of Side 1, D315, Audio Cassette 3.